Mind Your Farm Business on realagriculture.com is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
Welcome to Mind Your Farm Business, brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. I'm Sean Haney with realagriculture.com. Last episode of Mind Your Farm Business, we focused in on the younger generation. What were their questions? What were their needs? What were their desires in this process to continue on the family farm? Well, today, we're going to focus on the more senior partner in the organization, and that's probably mom and dad. So what do they want out of the process? What are the things that they need to have happen so that they feel good about the family farm succession transition? We're going to look at the family farm succession through the lens of the senior generation. Today's guest is Dick Whitman. He is based in Idaho. He is a family farm consultant. He's also a farmer himself. And even better, he himself and his family business just went through this transition. So the things that he talks about today are completely from the context of real life experiences. I love that. Dick joins us right now. Dick, how are you doing today?
Very good.
Hey, Dick, today we're going to focus on farm succession from the point of view of the senior generation. And, you know, when I look at the senior generation, I right away think about, in terms of farm succession, I think of like red light, green light. They can either be the biggest enabler to make sure farm succession happens in a timely, healthy, calm manner, or they can just be a red light where decades go on and nothing really happens.
That's correct.
And so, Dick, why is that? Why does it feel like, you know, we have these farm succession transitions where, you know, the younger generation is clearly eager to at least get somewhat involved, have some skin in the game. But why does the senior generation sometimes have some, I guess, hesitation and it seems to be, maybe it's not fair, but it seems to be a little bit more red light than green light?
Well, there's many dimensions to that question. And let me start with probably something that you won't traditionally hear very often is there seems to be an image in agriculture, both in the U.S. and Canada, well, globally, that all farms should be passed down. And if you don't pass your farm down or your legacy down, then you failed. And I think that's a huge incorrect belief. The fact is, if you built a business where you feel like you have a legacy that is unique and you have positioned the business to be sustainable and financially successful and you've trained your successors and they have an interest in that kind of location, then succession planning can and should be executed. But there are also times where you've gotten into the business of farming, you both have had a vocation to work there and you've made it your major investment, but your children don't want to do that. They want to be doctors, lawyers. They don't want to invest in the agricultural business. They don't want to work there. And for those people, succession planning should be more of an exit strategy of how to maximize the outcome and how do we help our children accomplish their goals in life and celebrate. Instead of looking at the failure in succession as a failure to, you know, we need to not make that a failure if in fact that is a conscious choice to exit and celebrate. And the alternative is in those situations where there is interest in having the business pass on and these potential successors have a desire to pass on, that's another whole discussion. And in that discussion, when we want to talk about red light, oftentimes the red light is not lack of desire to execute, it's paralysis on where to start, not understanding the critical conversations that need to take place. And I break those down into, people always say, well, you just need to communicate. And it makes me furious when I hear that. Because we all know we need to communicate. It's like, what do we need to communicate about? And that's where I've focused my career over the last 40 years, is breaking those into conversations that need to take place. Things like, how do we differentiate the transition of management and assuming managerial responsibilities to the next generation, how is that a different conversation from transitioning the ownership of the business? And oftentimes people don't separate that out. How do we look at what the mission, vision, and values are of the business today and whether or not the successors have that shared vision or values? And if there's not a compatibility, if there's not chemistry where those things are shared, that's an immediate recipe for a disaster in succession. The conversation about what are the skill sets and attributes that the successors need to have to be successful as managers or to be successful as investors in the business, these conversations need to be had in depth. And oftentimes we gloss over this. It's just like, well, why don't you come back to the farm and it will just work out. Well, it doesn't just work out. What happens is you have a wreck because people have unrealistic expectations of the experiences they need, the skill sets they should acquire. They have unrealistic expectations about what it means to be accountable to senior members of a business who they may be wanting to transition out their management roles, but they still are investors in the business. And they're not simply going to walk away and say, here, you take over and do whatever you want. So I'm rambling a bit, but my point is that very few people that I know that are stuck in the mud are there intentionally because they don't want to make a plan. They just don't know where to start. And they're horribly frightened about failing in the process.
Yeah, you know, that's, I think, a point of view that we don't think about very often is the emotional, mental side of it in terms of the, whether it be pressure they perceive or the pressure that's actually there to make it work out and, you know, how they will be judged in that farm transition, whether that be by other family members or peers that they farmed in their community with. There is a lot of pressures when it comes to farm succession. So you mentioned the communication part, and I completely agree. You know, we need to communicate more. Well, like how? What does that actually mean? The communication part's easy, but it's the details that really make a difference.
Exactly.
So, you know, if the hesitation is how do I get started because it's such a burdensome issue, how do you actually break it down into some finer details to make sure that you give yourself a chance for success? What are those initiators?
Well, that's a great question. And I always tell people it's complex, but it's doable. But you need to take any complex project. You have to break it down into digestible pieces. So the very first step oftentimes has been getting a family to define who are the stakeholders that are really affected by this and start with a family meeting where the basic ground rules are this. We're going to define what the size of the challenges are to go through a success planning process. And at our initial meeting, the ground rules are we're not here to make any decisions. We're here to simply gather people's viewpoints on what are the issues, what are the decisions that ultimately have to get made? What are people's goals? What are their dreams? And if we make it clear to people, we have a comprehensive agenda that helps lay out what the history of the business is, what the challenges will be to transition management, what the challenges will be to transition ownership. And we can gather the kids around if they're the stakeholders and say, what are your concerns? What are your goals? Who has an interest in owning farm assets? Who has an interest in working in the business and making this your vocation? Where, to combat your point earlier about emotions and assumptions, too many people make grossly inadequate or grossly inaccurate assumptions about what other people are thinking without ever sitting down and asking them for input. And I have chaired many of those family meetings where going into that meeting, there was great apprehension and emotional levels were at peak. And once you go through these conversations and you keep telling people, we're not going to make any decisions today, we're only gathering views and inputs and looking at possibilities, it's amazing what comes out in these discussions. And parents are awakened to ideas they never knew existed in their kids' minds. Kids are able to freely explore their feelings, their emotions, their concerns. And now we have a foundation of input where people can start looking at, okay, well, now that we know this, how do we start building a plan? But one of the biggest mistakes that I see in succession planning is people don't differentiate estate planning from succession planning.
Yeah.
And succession planning is, I call it business life planning. It's how do we, what's the hereafter in the succession of the ownership and management of the business? And estate planning is death planning. It's like, what's going to happen with my stuff after I die? And because I think we're fearful of what to do about succession planning, we put it off. But out of fear of government taxation and other things, we race to the attorneys and accountants and come up with an estate plan to gift assets and to avoid taxes. And then we sit down with the kids and say, look what we've done for you. And the kids go, why in the hell did you do that? Because there's been no succession planning discussions. So number one rule is succession planning should occur along with estate planning, but the succession plan should be completed first.
Yeah, you know, I know of an example where what happened is exactly as you described it. The family walked into a meeting where they thought they were going to discuss what was everybody's objectives in this farm succession process. And basically the senior generation, mom and dad, walked in and said, okay, here's what we decided and here's how we're going to do it. And here's what you're going to accept. And everybody was like, you didn't even ask us. And it railroaded things down a very, very negative path early because everything seemed to be so predetermined. The other thing that you mentioned, which I think is sort of, I would describe as sort of the golden age of the succession process, is that point in time where the ownership or a portion of the ownership has been that transition has happened to the younger generation. And there's this period of time where the younger partner and the older partners get to work together in the business. And too many times the older generation, the senior generation, looks at the transition as like, okay, I transferred it. I don't own any of it. I'm out of here. You don't want me. You push me out. And I think that's really the golden period where there's like that. That's where you get to enjoy the fruits of everything that you've worked so hard your whole life for. And you can still be a part of the business, even though you may own only a portion of it or maybe none of it.
That's a great one. And of course, you know my situation where I've recently transitioned from CEO to board chairman and transition coach. And it's a fine line between making that a golden age where you clearly handed off the reins to others to do the day-to-day operational management. But because you're still an investor, you have oversight over the new management team and they're still accountable to you or should need to be. And so you don't want to overstep and start micromanaging, but at the same point, you would hope that they would respect your institutional knowledge and the history you have in the business and how to tap those strengths as opposed to how strong your back is and how good you are at continuing to make day-to-day management decisions. So this is probably where my key focus is with many larger, complex family businesses, is how to truly coach people through that transition where the focus is on transition, not retirement. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times people ask me in the last year, how's retirement? And I'm going, I've not retired. I have transitioned. I have transitioned. And my job description is clearly different than it was a year ago, but I'm still showing up to work. But what I'm doing is totally different. I'm coaching and mentoring and doing special projects and doing everything I can to not second guess or step in to do day-to-day management. And there's enough to go around where we all have a full-time job. We do not need to be doing the other person's job. But people have never thought through the idea of life after being the boss. The traditional I do this all the time in my workshops. I talk about what's your career path. And I put a little slide up that shows you go from grunt to assistant manager to boss. And then I ask everybody in the crowd, and then what? And they look at you with a blank stare like, well, obviously you have to die. And then I say, then you have to die. And they all laugh because I've just said to them what I know is in their heads. And I said, you're not looking at this with enough. You need to think more flexibly about your career path as being a four-stage process where you go from grunt to assistant manager to CEO and then to board chairman. And then look at like, what's that mean? And you start looking at how do you transition out of that role of being the day-to-day manager into a mentor, a coach. And I don't mean sitting in the pompous boardroom smoking cigars with that kind of an image. You may be showing up to work just like you always do, but you're sitting back watching how others are assuming more responsibility. You're watching what are the training grounds that they're going through to learn how to be better managers. You're helping them to get involved in peer groups and networking systems where they can grow their management skills. You're looking at professional evaluation processes where you can tune up some of their methods in HR and finance. I mean, this is what coaching and mentoring is, and it's a job. So in addition to that, you know, businesses today are increasingly focused on how to build professional governance. And if you have waited till succession planning to start with that, then you've got a big job. But some of our businesses today have really advanced in the professionalism of their governance processes. So they've got written job descriptions and written policies and starting to write SOPs. And for those businesses, succession planning is a much less formidable challenge. Because when we're talking about transitioning roles, people already see in writing what those roles were, and they can look at the kinds of decisions others are making, what kind of experience and skill sets they need to gather. And you can make good choices about who should be in what roles in the future.
You mentioned this transition in our careers, and when I think of being, say, in my 60s or 70s, or for some people this even happens in the 80s, who wouldn't want to log some nice, peaceful time in the combine seat or the planter and really sort of really kind of enjoy that? Those are some of the jobs that we all did starting out on the farm. And exactly. Why not enjoy some of that time? You know, I want to jump back to communication quickly, Dick, and that is the importance of transparency. And I think a lot of farm successions get sort of sidetracked because there's lack of transparency and clarity on what you really, really want. And a lot of times we try to hold together and make sure that everybody's a happy group. And we sort of toss away temporarily real clarity on what objectives are. Now, from the senior generation's point of view, this can definitely happen, and it's very easy for this to take place. How important and why is it so critical that when you're communicating to your junior partners, you need to do it with clarity and transparency and be really honest?
Oh, I totally agree with you. And that, let me give you a couple dimensions on clarity. Let's talk about the ownership train first, and then we'll talk about the management train. On the ownership side, we don't start soon enough educating our potential successors on what the financial structure of the business is, what its performance has been. And if, let's say you built a business with a multi-million dollar equity, and you can't give it away and you can't sell it overnight, it's going to be a long-term process. I have clients who start educating their kids when they're 7 and 8 years old about finances in the business. And they've started to transfer some assets, and they have meetings where they educate them on performance. So when they're getting ready out of college or after a career for somewhere else to become investors, they know what the risks are, and they know if you offer, let's say you offer a son and a daughter-in-law an opportunity to buy into a 10% share of a business. They know what 10% means. It might mean $2 million of of capital where they might only have enough equity to make a 10% down payment and have to take on a huge amount of debt. So clarity on the investment side has to start with what is the size of the capital egg that you're dealing with here, and what will be the size of the challenge to transition the ownership of that over time, either through purchasing or gifting or wealth transfer at death. So clarity is a critical thing that we make a mess of this because we don't start early enough, and we don't do a good job of explaining finances to the next generation. Oftentimes, it's not because we don't want to, it's because we don't know, understand it ourselves, and we're not good at bringing in our professional advisors on helping us to educate our heirs on that. Clarity on the labor management side, there needs to be more clarity on if you're going to come into this business and assume major management roles, what does that mean? I am a strong advocate that people should have a clearly defined family employment policy that sets out what are your requirements to be able to work in this business. Do you have to have a shared vision and values? Do you have to work somewhere else for 2 to 3 years before you're even considered as an employee here? Does there have to be a vacancy? Do you have to have skill sets that match with the kind of needs that we have in the business? You can't just want to come back and work here. You have to bring something that is useful in terms of skill sets. There needs to be a match between your skill sets and the positions that are opening in the future, and so forth. So that kind of clarity is not possible when you have nothing written down. It comes from having clearly defined missions, visions, and value statements. It comes with clearly defined policy and structures on compensation and ownership of the business. It comes with clearly defined job descriptions where people have defined what it is they're doing now and what will it mean to transition out of those roles and who will do this job in the future. And when that clarity is on paper, we have much less misunderstandings and much less in the way of assumptions about who will get to do what.
Dick, very, very insightful. I want to thank you for joining us today on the Mind Your Farm Business podcast and taking a closer look at farm family succession from the point of view of the senior generation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. It's been great visiting with you.
Some really great stuff came out of that discussion with Dick Whitman. You know, so many farmers think about their legacy, but they only think about their legacy in terms of them being remembered as a farmer. You know, we care so much about the land and the livestock, we need to care more about ensuring that family farm succession transition goes more smoothly. You know, as Dick Whitman put here, it's about being at the end of our careers, it's about being a coach, a mentor, and helping out the next generation to enhance their success. Now, when I say helping them succeed, I don't mean fiscal things. I mean being that coach or that mentor. Making sure that the younger generation has someone to bounce some ideas off of. What would you do in this case? You know, your role in this whole process as the senior generation is not to have the response, well, you know, when I used to run this organization, here's what I would have done. No. Your response should be, hey, how can I help? Do you need some advice? I remember a situation like this in 1975. We went through this exact same thing. Here's what we did. Here's what we would have done differently. That's being a coach and a mentor. We can make this family farm transition go much more smoothly and have much more success on farms across Canada if we implement some of the things that we've talked about in these last two episodes of Mind Your Farm Business. It really is about the younger generation being open to what the senior generation is looking for in the process. And it's about the older generation really embracing the golden age of being a part of the family farm. I want to thank RBC Rural Bank for being the sponsor of this podcast. You can find more episodes of Mind Your Farm Business at mindyourfarmbusiness.com. Until next time, keep on minding your farm business.